Want the latest Indiana farm news and weather, plus a look at markets? We have it all for you. It's the HAT podcast from Hoosier Ag Today for Wednesday, December the 3rd, 2025. I'm Andy Eubank, joined today by Eric Pfeiffer and Greg Allen on the news. Will we ever see the year-round nationwide sale of E15 and how the soybean checkoff continues to deliver value back to the farm? Eric and Greg have those stories. Brought to you by First Farmers Bank and Trust, proudly serving local farms, families, and agribusiness for 140 years. They're online, ffbt.com, to learn more. HAT Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin is here, too, with the Indiana Farm Forecast. With cold air continuing this week, not much, though, in the way of snow activity. And the markets yesterday, mixed. We'll have settlements and Arlen Suderman market commentary on the HAT Wednesday podcast.
At First Farmers, we know that farming takes grit. From unpredictable weather to market fluctuations, our farmers face challenges. Since 1885, we've watched them weather those challenges without fail. That's why we're proud to help power farmers with financial products, services, and expertise built around the seasonal nature of agriculture that lets them continue powering our local communities. Is it time to expand your operation? Visit us at ffbt.com or stop by a local branch to get started. First Farmers Bank and Trust. Equal opportunity lender. Member FDIC.
The push continues for E15 and a few cents deliver value to the farm. This is Hoosier Ag Today. I'm Greg Allen. The push continues for passage of the Nationwide Consumer and Retailer Fuel Choice Act of 2025, which would allow for the year-round nationwide sale of E15. Here's Eric Pfeiffer.
Thanks, Greg. This bill would increase corn demand, obviously, but it would also be a huge benefit to families across the U.S.
High prices are putting a squeeze on America's families, including farm families. Combine that with historically low crop prices, and you have a recipe for disaster in rural America. But there is a solution, one that is a win-win for farmers and drivers across the nation. Year-round E15.
Zippy Duval is president of the American Farm Bureau Federation. He's one of many pushing for this bill to move in Congress.
Right now, federal law restricts the sale of E15 in many parts of the country because of outdated regulations from almost 50 years ago. Congress should give drivers a choice and expand markets for American-grown crops. Make E15 available year-round.
And Duval breaks down the numbers behind the bill.
Authorizing permanent ethanol blend fuels year-round could ultimately increase demand for corn by up to 2.4 billion bushels a year. And for drivers, the blend would save them 10 to 30 cents per gallon.
Certainly something many families could use right now. E15, or unleaded 88, is a cleaner burning fuel than the traditional unleaded 87, and it's safe to be used in vehicles model year 2001 and newer. Several Midwest governors recently voiced their support for year-round E15. Missing from that list, though, is Governor Mike Braun of Indiana. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
Attention farmers, a big part of the Keystone Cooperative Advantage is reinvesting into business to better serve farmer members. That's why Keystone is partnered with Purple Wave for their December 10th agricultural auction featuring equipment in Michigan, Indiana, and Ohio. Fine field-ready sprayers, Rogators, and semis, all selling at absolute no reserve. This is your genuine opportunity to enhance your operation with quality machinery. Visit purplewave.com today. Purple Wave Auction. Straight, simple, sold.
When farmers sell soybeans, a small mandatory assessment known as the soybean checkoff is collected. And while it may seem minor, that investment fuels a massive engine of research, market development, and new opportunities for U.S. soy. According to the chairman of the United Soybean Board, Philip Good.
So we're looking at the supply side and the demand side. On the supply side, we would be like investing in things like soybean cyst nematode, the number one yield robber for soybeans in the U.S. That's across most all states. I think this year we saw some red crown rot raise its ugly head in parts of the Midwest and northern Midwest. And then we're also looking, we have work groups looking on the demand side as well. And so that would include things like soy inclusion, you know, rates and feed rations for swine. Poultry is our number one customer, so we work highly with our poultry customers. And then looking at new innovations in the industrial realm, when you think about soy oil replacing petroleum in things like asphalt and rubber and shoe soles. And also there's a lot of interest, and rightly so, in soy foam.
For decades, China has been the dominant buyer, often purchasing more than half of all U.S. soybean exports. But industry leaders say relying heavily on one customer leaves farmers vulnerable to trade tensions, policy changes, and fluctuating demand.
China has been that big customer that has been developed, grown, and those relationships have been established by farmers in the past. And so to see the void that they left in our market is just another realization of the importance of diversification in our export markets.
Good says this approach not only stabilizes demand, but also positions U.S. soy as a premium, reliable product in multiple regions, helping farmers weather global uncertainty. And with protein consumption rising worldwide, the hope is that a broader customer base today means stronger, more predictable markets tomorrow.
We have focused on other countries and other locations around the globe, whether they are emerging markets, developing nations. We know that as population grows, their need for protein goes and grows right along with that. And so soybeans are there to help provide that, whether it's whole soybeans, soybean meal, or meat. We're fine with any of those being exported because all those are using our soybeans.
Independent economic studies show that every dollar invested in the National Soybean Checkoff generates several dollars in added value, whether through higher yields, stronger demand, or expanded export opportunities. And for America's soybean growers, those pennies truly add up. For more on this story, log on to HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Greg Allen.
Farmers know that hard work has its rewards. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America has designed our operating loans to work just as hard for you in return. Earn 1.5% cash back on all purchases when you connect your operating loan to our disbursement card. Because in times like these, some extra cash back never hurts. Visit fcma.com/operating to learn more. Disbursement card for use with an operating loan. Operating loans are subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply. Farm Credit Mid-America is an equal opportunity lender.
Now on the Hat Podcast, Ryan Martin's Indiana Farm Forecast, brought to you by the Indiana Ag Nutrient Alliance.
I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Indiana Farm Forecast. Don't have a lot super exciting for you here this morning, except for the fact it's cold. It's really cold. We have an Arctic high-pressure dome that's trying to take over for the rest of this week. Here today, it's sitting just to our west, so we still see some north low coming around the front side of this high. That means we still have some lake effect cloud cover to deal with in northern parts of the state, even down into central Indiana. Maybe a few flurries up in northern tier counties, but a mix of clouds and sun otherwise. The high-pressure dome sits right over the top of us for tomorrow. That's probably when we see our coldest air here in Indiana. And then we shift onto the backside of the high for Friday. Once again, late this weekend, early weekend, watching some moisture pass by to the north and south, but it's way to the north and south. I don't think we have anything to be concerned about here. Maybe just seeing some cloud cover offshoots. Saturday at this point is going to be partly sunny as well. Minor disturbance trying to rotate in on Sunday. It's a clipper system that's falling apart fairly quickly. I guess we'll say keep an eye out for a few hit and miss flurries late Sunday afternoon into Sunday evening, but at this point I'm going to say we don't see much at all. Monday of next week is mixed with clouds and sunshine, but clouds increasing late in the afternoon. That leads us to Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, where we have multiple waves of moisture coming through. I think we see a couple of rounds of accumulating snow that can work through the area here. And after that second or third wave late in the week, we start to see some very warm air surging this direction. That warm air covers a large part of the country coming out of the plains in southwestern United States. It makes it so our next round of moisture behind that for the weekend of the 13th and 14th likely is rain. And then we see more rain to start the following week. Monday the 15th, Tuesday the 16th, we could see heavy rain if all of this holds together right now. And then the temperatures crash behind as the Mother Nature bipolarness comes back. Polar vortex, sure, somebody's going to talk about that. It's just going to be an Arctic blast in here for the 17th forward as we get closer to Christmas. So a little bit of a respite on temperatures late next week and into the week following, but it's not going to stay. And Mother Nature is going to be bringing some significant moisture through the rest of the month of December here. I'm meteorologist Ryan Martin.
The end of the year reinforces the value of collaboration. From neighbors lending a hand to partners sharing know-how, teamwork is essential and is how Indiana Ag Nutrient Alliance operates on its mission of enabling viable farms, healthy soil, and clean water. Indiana's ag and commodity groups, alongside state government and conservation leaders, work together to vet practices that improve the environment while protecting farmers' bottom line. Helping Indiana farmers thrive is a win for all.
When it comes to their customers, Seed Genetics Direct can be a little nosy. They want to know where you live, your farm's geography and soil type, and even your environmental challenges. After all, Seed Genetics Direct uses more than 40 company-owned and third-party research locations throughout Indiana and Ohio to test their corn and soybean lineups. And with that many research locations, there's at least one similar to your farm that will help Seed Genetics Direct guide you on the path to growing success. Value, knowledge, performance, it's in their genetics. Seed Genetics Direct.
Corn and wheat higher, the struggle for beans continues. This is Hoosier Ag Today. I'm Andy Eubank with the Tuesday Farm Market Review, brought to you by AcrePro. Buying or selling farmland? Accomplish your goals with the help of AcrePro's land professionals. Get in touch today at acrepro.com. Settlements from Tuesday trade coming up. We'll begin, though, with thoughts from Arlen Suderman, chief commodities economist at StoneX. I spoke with him at the end of the Tuesday session. Chicago wheat led the way higher, and the corn market seemed to almost follow in lockstep. So the grain's up, soybeans lower. Let's begin with beans. We continue to look for flash sales announcements and maybe some other trade news that would prop that market up. So far this week, not happening, Arlen.
No, it's really not. And I'm getting concerned about a head and shoulders formation starting to form on that soybean chart. And so if we break measurably below about the 11.17, 11.18 area, that could be a warning sign that we've got more weakness ahead for us. So that's something we need to keep our eyes on. Even 11.20 area is a psychological area of support in this market. And I think there's a little bit of disappointment now that here we are just basically 4 weeks away from the end of 2025, and we haven't sold more soybeans to China. And so there's concerns about that, and that's weighing on the soybean complex.
Corn futures, another good export inspections report on Monday. And it is a market that seems to have some export strength to it. However, nothing major as far as upward moves.
Yeah, you're right about that. And the strength comes from the fact that you look at marketing year-to-date export sales, as far as USDA has reported them thus far, which is through October 23rd, since they're still trying to catch up following the government shutdown, that they exceed the seasonal pace needed to hit USDA's record high target by 300 million bushels. And export shipments, which are current, exceed the seasonal pace by about 244 million bushels, and that continues to climb. But we're not getting more of a premium in prices because the trade pretty well accepts that USDA is way too high on its feed usage number. And so as exports go up, feed usage goes down, and we're still stuck with a 2.1 billion bushel carryout.
Now the wheat story, which led the way, that market led the way, and it is, I believe, a little bit longer story. There's some news out of Russia and Ukraine, and did that Black Sea region news maybe provoke a little bit higher move in the wheat market?
It did, and that also contributed to the strength in corn today. Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, made some inflammatory comments today after the fourth Russian tanker vessel was attacked by drones in less than a week in the Black Sea region. Ukraine's not taking credit for the attacks, but it's largely believed to be Ukraine trying to strike at these ships. And President Putin says we'll just have to cut off the access Ukraine has to the Black Sea and maybe attack some of their vessels. And you would anticipate the risk that Ukraine might counterattack against more Russian vessels. And so if you shut down the Black Sea, either because of a direct threat or because insurance rates become too high for shippers to take on that cost, then you shut down a major portion of crude oil movement and wheat and other grain movement in the world. That's the world's largest exporting region for commodities. And so obviously the market's not in a panic about it. because we were up only single digits. But this is reminiscent of when the war started and we saw the huge surge in prices on the fear that we would see exports curtailed out of the region. Those fears obviously quickly calmed down, but we've escalated a bit more today and moved maybe a step closer to that risk being more of a reality.
Feeder cattle, live cattle markets, absolutely taking off today. What happened?
Ironically, fat cattle prices now are trading back above where they were when Tyson made their announcement about closing the Lexington, Nebraska facility and also curtailing operations at their Amarillo facility, going from two shifts down to one. And so basically we're getting back to supply and demand fundamentals. Supply of cattle is still tight. That announcement by Tyson didn't change the number of cattle. Secretary Rawlins has since then said that it'll be a while before we see the border of Mexico reopen. That's going to keep that supply of cattle tight. And when you look at the packer margins, they have turned very positive after being very negative for the last couple of years. And so that gives incentive for packers to fight over that existing supply, even though there's fewer, you know, one fewer of them now in the Nebraska market in particular, and to fight over a limited supply because they have incentive to move as many cattle through on that chain as possible when these margins are as good as they are right now.
Market commentary from Arlen Suderman, StoneX and StoneX.com. Now the Tuesday settlements, March corn 450 even, it gained an even nickel. May contract 457 and a half, up 4 1/4. January soybeans 1124 and 3/4, down 3 1/4. March down 3 cents even, going to 1135. And March wheat 6 cents higher, 541. May up a nickel at 548. The meat market's mixed. February live cattle strong, 220.80, up 487. And February lean hogs, $80.17, down 12. I'm Andy Eubank. Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's most listened to farm network.